You've got the beat. I'm Megan Sukies. The word Scientology literally means the study of truth. But in today's media, Scientology is connected to big celebrities and a highly litigious religion. While Tom Cruise, Kirstie Alley, and Isaac Hayes are some of the high-profile followers of Scientology, L. Ron Hubbard is the most famous Scientologist of all because he founded the religion. A new one-man show from Mike Daisy, who you may remember turned 3 years at Amazon into an international stage sensation, a new show from him profiles L. Ron Hubbard as a great man of genius. Mike Daisy joins us this afternoon to shed a little light on the shadowy founder of Scientology.
Good to see you.
So, who is L. Ron Hubbard?
Well, it really depends on who you talk to, because if you ask the Church of Scientology, L. Ron Hubbard is an enlightened man who brought us a system for understanding truth and the universe that is an expandable framework that replaces all existing religions, and that he comes in a direct line from Descartes and the great thinkers of the past. And if you ask L. Ron Hubbard himself in his autobiographies, he describes at length how he was raised with the Blackfoot Indians, and he was blooded as a brave, and how he had visions of death as a young man. He was a naval hero. He saved natives, babies from burning, built really like a whole hagiography of a fantastically interesting and constantly self-promoting life. And if instead you were to do some historical research, as a number of authors have done, you would discover that L. Ron Hubbard is neither of these things. L. Ron Hubbard was a pulp science fiction writer who was never blooded as a Blackfoot Indian, and who was in the Navy, but his greatest event was firing his submarine's guns on a pack of unarmed cattle on the side of an island, killing them, after which he was unceremoniously discharged from the Navy. He studied black sex magic with Aleister Crowley in England and was part of a bunch of orgiastic cults. Then he moved to America, wrote a lot of really, really long science fiction books like Battlefield Earth, which is 1,300 pages long. And then he thought, I should invent a religion. And kind of famously made a bet with another science fiction writer, Robert Heinlein, and said, like, I bet I could invent a religion, and I could invent it, and I could market it, and you just need enough levels and systems in there, and you could sell somebody a piece of blue sky. You could just sell people the happiness they already have. And Heinlein said, you can't do that. He said, watch me. And the rest is more or less history.
Is there actual evidence that, in fact, L. Ron Hubbard made that claim when he invented Scientology?
There's certainly a lot of anecdotal evidence in that he liked to tell people about this. So the people who've written books about him, like the book Barefaced Messiah and A Piece of Blue Sky, go at great lengths to the fact that he wasn't very quiet about this. I mean, he was constantly telling people, you're not going to believe what I've done. And he would tell them at length, like, I bet this guy bet I could invent a religion, and here it is. I mean, and that's one of the dichotomies that's interesting in him, is that for the religion to really work, for it to take off the way that it has, requires, you know, dedication and faith on the parts of all the people who follow L. Ron Hubbard. And he was single-minded in his ability to hold two truths in his mind at the same time. He seemed to be completely convinced of the truth of the religion he was spouting, and then you look at his actual actions bore almost no resemblance to the ideals that he was propagating, including the fact that he would tell people that he was making up the religion as he went along. And so it's one of the things that makes him really interesting to me, is that complete that schism.
You're listening to The Beat this afternoon. We're talking to writer and performer Mike Daisy. His latest one-man show tackles the great men of genius. He's in town for a four-evening meditation on men and their gifts. One of the men he profiles is L. Ron Hubbard. And so you gave us a sense of the dichotomy of what some people will say he was, a naval hero. He'd mm-hmm. been brought into a Native American tribe as a brave. And in fact, he fired off guns at cows and got dismissed. What other aspects of his life were you able to uncover that for you were very revealing about this egotism and how, you know, he really did serve himself?
Well, I mean, one of the largest, one of the largest movements is how Scientology is birthed in the first place. That it came out of Dianetics, which was a system of psychotherapy that that L. Ron Hubbard came up with before he began to work on Scientology. It was actually a huge fad. Everyone in America was into Scientology Dianetics for a brief period of time. Everyone was very obsessed with it. It was because therapy had just begun, and he offered this alternative that was faster than therapy. So you didn't have to be in therapy forever. Instead, you could just follow Dianetics, and you would hold on to the E meter, and then everything would sort itself out. And of course, it turns out that it actually works not through solving people's problems. It works through inducing a self-hypnotic state by repeating phrases again and again with an auditor. And then the auditor leads you through reenactments of the most painful memories from your life, which has the side effect of having you spill your gut to whoever is auditing you, and they soon know all your psychological weaknesses. And then once they get you to talk through a terrible event from your life, they then, instead of processing that event the way that the AMA would have you do, they instead say, "That didn't happen. That didn't happen. You are like a god. You are a perfect person. That didn't happen to you. That didn't happen. That didn't happen." They just repeat that again and again, and then they take you out of the state. And what happens, of course, is that people, after being audited, feel great, because you leave and you're like, "I'm a god. I feel great." But of course, this doesn't actually work, because you can't solve your psychological problems by pretending they don't exist. So you go home and you start to feel kind of, you know, you get depressed, things creeping along the edges. Well, what do? You call your person from the Dianetics clinic and say, "I'm feeling bad." And the Dianetics person says, "That's because you're not trained enough in Dianetics. You need to come back and have another session." And then it becomes very psychologically addictive. And so he took that Dianetics, and it started growing in popularity, and then it dropped off, as fads often do. And it was after it dropped off that he took it and refashioned it and added all the religion around it, and it became Scientology.
Mike Daisy is a writer and performer. He profiles great men of genius in a one-man show. It's a four-evening meditation on men and their gifts, including P.T. Barnum and, who we've been talking about today, L. Ron Hubbard. So with this uncovering, getting behind that shadowy figure behind Scientology, the two lives that you can find out, the real life and the life that's put forward by the church, and understanding how he was able to parlay some of his own, perhaps his own hidden, his own ability at fooling himself, his own mm-hmm. ability at self-hypnosis, and into this large religion. Did you gather any insight into this trend of Scientology for yourself as it's growing and we see more and more celebrities and more presence? Was there anything for you, an insight that you were able to take away, like, now I understand more?
Well, I'll be honest that it's been really interesting studying it, to see what the reactions of other people, friends and colleagues who I talked to about the project. It's been very interesting looking at their reactions. And one of the things that's really struck me is the immense amount of scorn I always hear from people, sometimes very, very intelligent, and people who consider themselves very compassionate, have immense amounts of scorn for people who get sucked in to Scientology. And it's interesting because, the people who get trapped in Scientology, because I've talked to a number of them as well in the process of building this monologue, they know that, and they know that other people in society view them with scorn. It's actually a tool that Scientology uses in the process of bringing people in. Once you start down the road, they make very clear that other people aren't going to understand you. They're not going to understand what you're going through. And I hadn't fully realized how alienating that was, and how the inability of people to accept that the human mind is a fragile thing. It's very hard for people to accept this, that the human mind can be changed, that what we believe can change and what we remember changes, because we're so certain that, oh, I know myself. I'm not one of those people, those dorks, those incredible dorks. Because we do that, it gives them the tools they need to keep the people who start down that road, because they can't leave. Who could they talk to about it? People will just be like, What was wrong with you? Why did you start? Why are you in the Scientology cult? And that's a big part of it, that they can't find escape. And I didn't realize that we sort of society was so complicit in making it possible for them to stay stuck there.
And that does, to me, remind me a bit of what you're just saying about men of genius like L. Ron Hubbard, a split between that incredible power of the mind, but not being aware of the flaw on the other side. Is that those two things have to be taken together, whether you're P.T. Barnum or L. Ron Hubbard, or you're just a person trying to understand your friends. You've got to understand those two sides, the genius and the flaw.
Yeah, I think that's very true. And these monologues, like all my work, you know, it's not straight biography. Like, it alternates between the life story of L. Ron Hubbard, but it also talks about these people I've met from Scientology and my encounters with the church, and sort of weaves back and forth. And I think that a big point of the whole series is looking at that dichotomy, that there needs to be an integration between the gifts each of us has and sort of our moral and ethical responsibility to society in general. And it is hard to balance when you feel a sort of calling to do something and a sort of messianic urge, how to balance that sort of like greater than life vision with the nuts and bolts of being a human in a human society. And I think that's like a central tension that runs through all four of the monologues. And I think it's a tension that undid L. Ron Hubbard for the most part.
Mike Dazy, thanks for coming in today, giving us a little more insight into that shadowy figure.
Absolutely.
Mike Dazy performs his one-man show, Great Men of Genius, a four-evening meditation on men and their gifts at the Capitol Hill Arts Center tonight through Sunday. Tonight, he profiles P.T. Barnum. Tomorrow, Nikola Tesla. And Sunday, he tackles the founder of Scientology, L. Ron Hubbard. Check the Beat homepage at kuow.org for details on the show and a link to Mike Dazy's website.